MDRadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. You are listening to Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and make sure to check out my website, www.cardiochef.com, as well as Radio MD, to see what I'm up to nationally and when I'm in your neighborhood, as well as look for great articles and all sorts of important information. And speaking of important information, we are speaking today on one of my passions, which is salt, so important medically and so critical when we cook. My guest today, Daryl Bossart. He's a well-known and highly regarded national speaker, passionate about healthy living, healthy eating, and I like to call him Mr. Salt, where he distributes the salt that I use, a real salt made by Redmond, a trading company. Daryl, so good to have you on the program today. Thanks for coming back.
Dr. Mike, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
And you're sounding a lot better than last time. I know you had a little frog in your throat. And one of the things, one of the reasons I bring that up is because I remember as a kid, I used to always, unfortunately, had some malformation of my eardrum and ear canal when I was little, and used to always end up getting strep throat and throat infections and tonsillitis. And actually, one of the cures that was recommended to my mom by the physicians back then was actually gargling with salt water.
Yeah, gargling with salt water is great. If you've ever had a tooth extract, the dentist will recommend you gargle with salt water. If you've had, maybe you've got a singing or a presentation coming up, voice coaches will tell you to gargle with salt water. Because salt water is actually very healing. It's also a great antiseptic, but a lot of uses for gargling and rinsing with salt water for sure.
Yeah, and I've got to say, from personal experience, and I can remember as a little kid, that worked great for me. And I want to back up just a second, because, you know, we talk about salt, which you and I know we're talking about sodium chloride. But for the listeners, what is salt? What are we really talking about when we say, you know, that big all-encompassing term salt?
So from a chemistry standpoint, salt is any acid and base that are bound together in an ionic bond. And so you've got things like magnesium chloride or calcium chloride or magnesium sulfate. These, in chemistry, these are all known as salt. Now, when in a chef situation or when you and I are discussing salt, when we mean salt, we're usually talking about one particular type of salt, which is known as table salt or sodium chloride. Of all the different types of salt, the cooking salt is sodium chloride. You have one sodium and it's bound to one chloride, and that gives you sodium chloride. And that particular salt is the base salt for cooking. It's also the base salt in every IV in the hospital. Now, there, as a cardiologist, you know, there are other types of salts that you may introduce in an IV situation. Magnesium chloride, potassium chloride, those all play a role in the body as electrolytes, but the primary salt that we're talking about is sodium chloride, which is the primary salt in seawater and in our bodies.
And it's interesting you bring that up, because sodium chloride is the building block of life. And you mentioned seawater, and I thought what's really fascinating to kind of look from an evolutionary point of view is the salinity of our blood actually matches the seawater from about the time that amphibians crawled out of the ocean kind of into the muck and waddled around. And the oceans have gotten saltier since then, which is why you can't drink salt water. You'll get dehydrated. But, you know, our blood itself is a snapshot, you know, of hundreds of millions of years ago of the salinity of the sea. And the basis of our life is salt. So, you know, I think sometimes people get it in their heads is that I've got to avoid salt at all costs, not realizing, as you point out, it's critical when somebody comes in dehydrated. We're giving them sodium chloride, you know, either half normal, full normal, saline. And it's critical certainly for the heart to function. Basically, every system of the body depends on sodium chloride.
Yeah, and as you point out, outside of an electric current, you know, if you and I are here alive 1 minute and then we're both dead the next minute, outside of, you know, a religious discussion or spiritual discussion, something like that, the difference in us visiting here and dead the next minute is the absence of an electric current. Our mind tells our hand to move through electricity. Our heart pumps, you know, via electricity. So we need this electric current in our bodies. And without that salt, which is an electrolyte, allows that electricity to pass through our bodies. And so if you have somebody that's out in the hot Florida sun and they're running and they're sweating and they're losing all of this fluid, you know, our tears are salt, our urine is salt, our sweat is salt. And so no matter how much water we're drinking, we are sweating salt. And so if we don't replace that, as a physician, you know all of the problems that start to settle in when somebody's electrolyte balance and salts start to drop.
That's absolutely, you're absolutely 100% correct. And the way that we get salt is that we crave salty foods. And as omnivores, that's kind of how we develop from an evolutionary standpoint, because carnivores get all the salt they need from eating the flesh. But as omnivores, the basis of our diet was primarily plants, although obviously we consume fish and other sorts of meats, but we had to seek external. We have a salt craving. So speaking of which, we have a special taste. So we're going to give away to the fourth person who tweets, I love real salt, hashtag I love real salt, to at WCWG. That's me on Twitter. We got a special giveaway for them today. So Daryl, can you tell them what they're going to get?
Yeah, tell you what we'll do. What if we did that to the fourth, fifth, and sixth person to tweet? So we'll give away three total, if that's okay with you.
I think that is awesome. I think that is absolutely awesome. So you've just increased your chance of winning by 300% just for listening.
Well, we'll put a fun gift pack together. We'll include some full-sized shaker and a pouch of salt, maybe some seasonings as well. But it'll be a really nice prize package, and we'll just ship that out to you directly. To those multiple winners. I wanted to touch on one thing you mentioned, you know, with you kind of went back into history and talked about this history of salt. And not only was salt essential for life and for animals, as you pointed out so well, but in fact, every civilization that we know of today kind of started around access to salt deposits. In fact, the term salary is based on the word saline or salt, because at one time people were paid wages in salt. The term is a man worth his salt was because you were getting paid a wage and it was salt. And so this idea that salt is bad is really foreign to our ancestors, because salt was essential for life. It was written in religious books. It was a source of trade. It was used in religious ceremonies across all types of religions. And yet today you hear salt's bad. And so, you know, there's definitely a disconnect when it comes to salt.
Well, there really is, and you bring up the great point. It actually, I believe, comes from the Latin salarium, because Roman soldiers were sometimes paid their wages in salt. And as you point out, that's where that term, is he worth his salt, comes from. And there were entire empires that were, you know, that raised and were fallen because of salt, or the loss of salt on the trades. I think you hear the term Timbuktu. You know, people talk about, oh, you know, from here to Timbuktu. Timbuktu was a place, and it still is, very much out of the way, but it reached prominence because it was a source of salt in northern Africa. So yeah, we can go all the way through, and really up until about 1970, when we had the Senate hearings, Senator McGovern chaired the first dietary recommendations. I believe they were passed in 1977. And it's interesting you bring that up. That's how recent. It's only been about 50 years we've sort of been on this kick about we shouldn't eat so much salt, even though actually when we look at salt consumption of our ancestors, they probably ate more salt than us, yet they didn't have all these problems that we're seeing, which may more likely be related to all the processed food. But it's interesting because a article was published kind of addressing another topic which was discussed in those regulations, which was saturated fat. And this study found that saturated fat did not correlate to cardiovascular disease, as have a number of studies. Folks can go to my webpage, cardiochef.com. They can look up, Dr. Mike Fenster on Atlantic.com or Pacific Standard, and as well as read it in The Fallacy of the Calorie, a whole chapter discussing what I think is real misdirection and a real demonization of salt that I don't think the data really bears out. What's your take on that?
You know, I would absolutely agree, because if you look, you know, before we had the refrigerator, all of us would have eaten more salt, because we would have had more kimchi and preserved foods and meats that would have been preserved with salt. And so the idea that salt is bad, and outside of the idea that, you know, whether you are healthy or not, and you walk in and get an IV, it's going to be saline solution, which is salt water. You'd never give an IV of celery juice or an IV of tea or coffee or even distilled water, an IV of anything.
Though there are days I have needed an IV of coffee, I must confess.
Yeah, I think we can all probably relate to that. But, you know, it's this interesting that, you know, salt is so essential for life, and our kidneys, you know, outside of somebody that's got a kidney failure, our kidneys are designed to process a lot of salt. But yet when you throw in all these other artificial colors and flavors and these processed foods with the salt, yeah, you know, salty processed foods are a problem, but it's the processed foods, it's not the natural sodium chloride that our bodies
right.
crave.
And you bring up a critical differentiator, because salt is sodium chloride, and you're getting that balance of the sodium and the chloride. But when you're eating these processed foods, in which over 70% of the daily intake of sodium comes from. So if you want to cut down on the sodium, folks, just skip the processed, prepackaged, you know, takeaway drive-through junk and the stuff in a box, and you're not going to be getting the sodium. And I think that's a critical point that folks miss when we talk about reducing the salt. We're not really talking about reducing the sodium chloride, because taking the sodium chloride out of the diet, dietary restriction, has never, ever in one single study shown to impact cardiovascular endpoints or mortality or morbidity. However, what we want to cut down is the sodium, because the sodium, like sodium monosodium glutamate, MSG, you know, sodium acetate, it's on all these additives that you point out, the artificial flavors, sweeteners, preservatives, et cetera, et cetera. And one other thing that I think is real important that you hit on is that in the past we used salt, natural salt. So a lot of times that wasn't pure sodium chloride, because it had other very important trace minerals and elements included in it. So when folks are going to win their gift pack today, they're going to win some real salt. And if you could just tell us a little bit difference between the, you know, the umbrella pure salt with some iodine added and what I would consider real salt, which is the natural form of it.
Yeah, so the nature of salt sort of changed about the turn of the century. You know, years ago, salt producers would bring the water out of the ocean, and it occurs as a complex chloride. Yeah, the majority of it is sodium and chloride, which is what your body's based on. But there's also trace amounts of magnesium chloride and calcium chloride and other minerals that are in seawater that are also in your body that are essential for health. In fact, there was one nutritionist that said that the ratio in minerals in seawater is pretty much the same as the ratio of minerals in the body. Which is kind of interesting, as you pointed out, based on, you know, how the evolution of man and seawater and things like that have come around. But the nice thing is, if you go back and look at the way natural salt's created, it has these same minerals in it, versus if you look at a lot of salt companies today, they'll bring their seawater out of the San Francisco Bay, for example, which isn't the cleanest body of salt water. But then they'll take out the calcium chloride and sell it off to a vitamin company, or maybe they take out the magnesium chloride and sell it off into industry. And so now that we're starting to mess with the ratio of minerals in the seawater, and then we're selling this kind of refined salt left, but that's only part of the problem. Then they put it in high heat to drive out moisture, and then there's a lot of different additives in it. If you look at the back or the label of a lot of salts, even a lot of quote-unquote sea salts, there are a lot of additives, things that repel moisture, that affect, you know, all kinds of other systems in the body. Just a few of these would be like yellow prussiate of soda, which is sodium ferrous cyanide, or calcium silico aluminate. You know, these are mineral or chemicals that are added to salts to expel moisture, so the salt doesn't clump in the shaker. But, you know, if you took two licks of your antiperspirant every morning before breakfast, it's going to cause some problems.
Yeah, we try to minimize the ingestion of aluminum, or as my British friends say, aluminium.
Yeah, so it's just, so that's the idea of real salt. When my family started harvesting this salt from an ancient seabed in Utah back in the late 50s, we sat around, or I didn't, but the family sat around and said, what do we call this stuff? It's not, you know, half salt, fake salt. It's just real salt, and the name stuck. And so that's how we continue to sell this salt from an ancient seabed here in Utah. We don't add anything to it. We don't take anything out of it. Geologists say this was an inland sea from the Jurassic era that evaporated and settled off over time. And that's all it is just this prehistoric sea, and we just crush it up.
And I love it. I've been using it for years and years, and it's my kosher salt. I use it all the time when I cook. And one thing I think folks like when they're cooking, and you can get all sorts of different kind of specialty salts, and you guys have some seasoned ones, but you know, we talk about kosher salt, and it's the same salt. It's just a different size in the flake, and that's kind of real convenient to take and pick up in your fingers and sprinkle on the food, and it works real good in terms of kind of being able to distribute it, and it's sort of the perfect size. But there's a lot of other different kinds of salts, including finishing salts, which are something I kind of reserve, you know, for kind of special occasions right at the end of the meal, maybe not seasoning. And I'm real big, and we always talk about seasoning as we cook, because that salt, it's not just the salt flavor. That salt enhances all the other flavors, tastes, and textures as we cook. So you want to build in layers and add a little salt, you know, as I'm cooking in the pan. I add a couple more ingredients. We add a little bit of salt. And that's when I use my real salt. And then at the end, I might want to finish it with a finishing salt. Can you tell the folks kind of what those are? And I know that you guys carry some and sell some,
obviously.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of different types of good salt. And then the real salt, like you said, is available in different sizes. In a kosher size, it's more of a, like you'd put on a pretzel or maybe edamame or maybe a meat rub. And then there's also some really fun, obviously I'm biased to this, you know, mineral salt from Utah, but there's some other great salts out there. It's more of like a delicate salt you might put on top of, say, a salt caramel or maybe a nice fish presentation. Some of my favorites, there's one called Murray River Salt. It's a kind of a unique rosy-colored salt from this river in Australia called the Murray River.
Australia, right, yeah.
Really expensive. You would not want to use it in a soup, because if the salt dissolves, you know, the soup, kind of the magic of the finishing salt goes away.
Right.
And so this would be a used on the salt caramel. Another favorite, I'll just end with this one, is called Bali salt. They look like beautiful little pyramids. It's a white, beautifully shaped pyramid. It's really expensive, but if you're going to put a little salt on like a salt caramel or something, it's a really nice little delicate pyramid-shaped crystal that adds some flair and some fun in the presentation that you would kind of lose if you put it into a soup or into something that where the salt just dissolves and disappears. And so the real salt I use is as my basic salt for everything. But in the case of maybe a fun presentation, then the Murray River or Bali salt are both kind of fun finishing salt. Very expensive, but kind of fun.
Yeah, and I have actually a whole closet full of these somewhat expensive finishing salts. And the way to use those, folks, is as the name implies, you don't use it sort of as you're cooking and building the layers of flavor, but at the very end, or, you know, sometimes, for example, when I can get the really fresh, garden fresh, right out of the garden, tomatoes that's, you know, sweet and juicy and slightly sweet, and I want to serve that, one of my favorites, and I'm actually such a salt kind of freak that, you know, wherever I go, when I get to travel around the world, I'm checking out their local salts. So I have these, one of my favorites to use on something like that garden fresh tomato is a peat smoked sea salt from Scotland. So you're getting almost that kind of whiskey peat smokiness, you know, and it just carries over. If you, as you pointed out, Daryl, that would be lost if we were just cooking in a soup or, you know, just seasoning in the pan. But on that fresh tomato, oh my gosh, those are the things that take your meal to the restaurant level, just using the right salt.
Yeah.
What's your, one of your, favorite, I think, things to finish with a really nice finishing salt?
You know, I don't need a lot of soy, but I do like edamame. And so what I like to do with our kosher sized crystals, I'll, you know, do a quick boil or steam of some edamame in the pod. And then I will use our kosher salt to finish that at the end. So I don't boil it in the salt water like you might with some vegetables. And what I do is I boil it, and then at the end, then I will toss it with some of the kosher
salt.
Toss it up
with the salt.
Then as you're eating the edamame, there's a nice little crunch.
That's perfect. Hey, Daryl, it's been great having you on. Where can folks find you? At
www.realsalt.com.
Realsalt.com. Get there and get you some. And we have a couple of winners we'll announce later. You are listening to Co-Delicious.